It's time to play like a Jet with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Mekhi Becton, ladies and gentlemen, human beings that large should not run as fast as Mekhi Becton did. And if you like people just abusing other humans, the Mekhi Becton tape is for you.
Denzel Mims with another monster score of 70 yards.
Quick pass to Crowder, trying to get him out of space. Slips a tackle, and there he goes. Crowder, it's a foot race, and Crowder is in there. A 69-yard touchdown.
Darnold escapes, trying to buy himself some time. Fires end zone. It's caught. Incredible play by Darnold.
Hill hit immediately.
He got the handoff.
You know and it's
the Q-inator.
Oh, my gosh.
Listen, thank you.
From the TOJ Digital Studio, this is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. And we're going to review the film from the Jets' loss to the Kansas City Chiefs with the man who breaks down the film like nobody's business over at JetsXFactor.com for the show Blew It's Blitz, Mr. Joe Blewett. Joe, what's going on, buddy?
Nothing really. Again, I can repeat the same thing I said the week before and the week before and the week before. It's another week closer to the end of the season. Evaluating the young guys, really couldn't care any less about the guys who are not going to be on the Jets next year. But it's about the young guys. It's about looking into free agency with the Jets cap space. And it's about, imagining who the Jets are going to get with all these draft picks coming up. So that's kind of the fun part, the silver lining of this really dark season for the Jets.
Joe, you mentioned evaluating the young guys, and some would say that a 23-year-old person is young. That 23-year-old person that I might be referring to is Sam Darnold. What'd you see from him?
This wasn't his worst game of the season, which isn't saying much because his worst games were pretty damn bad. It was one of his less bad games. Like, I'm gonna say it was below average, but it's still, which is obviously not enough for us to not pick who we might be picking at one. But it wasn't terrible. There was definitely some reps where guys weren't getting open. There was definitely some reps where he had guys in his face, mostly because of a guy named Alex Lewis, who was absolutely terrible. But then there was also plays where he just missed open guys. And we saw examples of him just being, trigger shy, which is a huge problem. Some quarterbacks just don't get back, which is a huge concern with Darnold, 23 years old, but he also has a ton of starts under his belt. You want to see more out of him and trust his eyes. And two specific examples, I forget if the one was I know it's to the right side, and it was out from the number three and then a post wheel from the number one, too. And it was, I believe it was third and two, I'm pretty sure. And he sees the number three open on the out route. For what could have been a first down, there was some pressure in his face that he decides not to pull the trigger. And I think he ends up running into a sack on that play, or just throwing the ball away. I think actually for that play, he threw the ball away. So there's an example of some pressure getting into his face where people might stand the broadcast. Oh, well, nobody was open. He had to throw the ball away. When you actually looked at the film, there was a guy open on an out route that he was looking that way and just either didn't see him or didn't pull the trigger. And there's another example on the left side, later in the game. And that was a third and three. And the inside receiver runs a in route. The number one on the outside runs a slant that's stemming outside initially in the drive phase. And based on leverage and based on reading that side of the field, because he was only reading those two guys, the number one, the number two on the in route gets carried by the defensive back or linebacker inside. So you don't have to worry about him. There was nobody, robbing it or a lurk or anything, and any one of those type of defenses, trying to jump the slant. And then the only guy who was responsible for the slant had outside leverage and was over top of the slant by 2-3 yards. So Darnold should anticipate that with nobody inside and the defender having poor leverage on the slant, you have to trust your receiver and throw the ball. And even if he didn't trust his receiver during the break, he could have evaluated that and threw the ball. But he looks that way, sees that, I'm assuming he sees that, and doesn't pull the trigger, scrambles, runs around the pocket, takes a sack. So that's still happening. Obviously week eight of the season, it's been happening a lot more in some other games, but wasn't his worst game, but still not his best game. Like, you have to make the plays that are there. Things as simple as pulling the trigger, half field reads. There's reads where it's not even okay you know, 1 to 2 and then 3 to 4 on the opposite side of the field of pass field reads that he's not executing, and simple concepts where, you know, you have an in and a slant route where it's just a shorter stretch type, you know, concept. You're stretching out the inside of the defense and or the intermediate level of the defense, and he just can't process it. And that's a major issue because these are, again, it's not a very complex type thing that he's doing. And there's a play later in the game too, where there's a deep over route from the right side of the field. I believe it was the field side. I forget the concept was to the left, but he sees Jeff Smith open. Jeff Smith notices towards the sideline that there's a defensive back kind of squatting there. I believe he's going to curl the flat. And Jeff Smith kind of looks at Darnold and anticipates that Darnold's going to throw it a little bit on to Jeff Smith because Jeff Smith doesn't want to run into the guy who's in the curl of the flat. So Jeff Smith anticipates that Darnold's going to throw the ball, again, almost behind him or on him instead of leading him to the defender. And Darnold leads into the defender, and the ball is almost picked off. So there's a lot of things that he's still doing wrong yet. And even though this wasn't his worst game, it's still not a good enough game to kind of take us off of that Trevor train right now. So still wasn't pretty.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Let's talk about some more young players, Joe, namely Mekhi Becton and Denzel Mims. Denzel Mims had one outstanding catch where he had to contort his body but didn't get a lot of targets. And Mekhi Becton wasn't his best game in pass protection, but I thought he was still pretty good. Talk to me about those guys and the rest of the weapons on offense and the offensive line. And let's not dwell too much on Christopher Herndon because, my goodness.
So Becton, again, I think last week was probably his worst week. And his worst week is still him being, you know, average to maybe even slightly above average, which is fine. I think this week, too, he was all right, but he wasn't great. That one highlight play, again, I'm a little bit of a contrarian. I think you know that, Scott. And that one play that everybody's putting up of him throwing Frank Clark was actually like 20% him and 80% Alex Lewis. Like, Frank Clark was actually anchoring down versus Becton, and Becton didn't really even do the best job of getting his hips under the block. It was kind of just upper body, and Clark was going to anchor down versus Becton, and Lewis just caught him at a good time. So everybody's hyping up Becton for that play, but it was really Lewis. So I see that stuff. I'm like, what are they? I get the casual fans in this, but I see like people who are supposed to be respected saying, you know, hyping up that play. So people aren't really fair in their evaluation. And again, I'm not killing Becton at all. So do not get me wrong on that. And don't think I'm a Becton hater, because I love and I cannot be happier with how Becton's playing. But I definitely just want people to be fair in their evaluation. It's kind of frustrating to see, to be completely honest with you. And Becton, again, played solidly this game, you know, above average, but this was not his best game. You know, that, you know, the Niners game, some of those other games earlier in the season, the Colts game were really, really, really good. Even the Bills game, his first game, was awesome. But these last two games, just above average, solid, but not what we were seeing. And I think it's a part of the injury. And it could be a part of the rookie highs and lows. And listen, to the beginning of the season, Scott, like we said, we would be happy with him being average this season because of how high we thought his highs would be, but also how low we thought his lows would be. And if his lows right now are him being above average, that's freaking fantastic. So don't think I'm killing him, because I think he's going to be, and I think he might already be, a top 10 left tackle in the league, which is, you know, fantastic. But, yeah, this game he had a couple of lulls, you know, but overall still pretty damn good. Mims, again, you know, if he was targeted in the second half like he was the first half, maybe he'd have, you know, 150 yards through two games. But unfortunately, he just gets targeted in the first half, which I do not understand. And again, I think for his usage, I think he's being used a little bit too much in the slot. And there's also some times where Adam Gase is sending, you know, Jeff Smith on vertical routes where he should be sending a guy named Denzel Mims. You know, I don't get Jeff Smith on one-on-one deep shots, again, when you have Denzel Mims, who was one of the best contested ball catchers in college football last year and even the year before that. So it doesn't make a lot of sense to me there. But overall, when he is getting targeted, obviously we saw the body contortion. We see the body control in that catch that he had. We also saw a little bit of him pushing off of the cornerback, and not in a bad way, in a good, smart, veteran, savvy way, where it didn't look like it was like it happened. On the broadcast view when it's happening quickly, but you go back and watch the film and he actually did push off a little bit, which is a great thing, him knowing how to use his hands. His route running, there was another example, Scott, I remember doing his breakdown with you where I talked about how sharp one of his breaks were with bad technique. And I saw another example of that again, deep right of a sideline. I believe it was a comeback. And, you know, he doesn't throw himself into a stop step. He's losing a little bit out of his break. Some bad route running in terms of his technique, but he still got out of his break pretty quickly, which is a nice route that he ran. Overall, I would like to see him be a little bit more, when he's crossing guys' face, I want to see him be a little bit more ready for the hands. I also want to see a little bit more finesse in his route running at times, because we see some of his routes off the line of scrimmage where he's trying to get a little bit too physical with guys, where, you know, you're not playing at Baylor anymore, so you can't just get physical with NFL DBs because a lot of them are going to be able to match your strength, or some of them, because he's a pretty strong guy. So overall, there are some improvements I want to see from him. But overall, first two games, no training camp, you know, no first 6 weeks of the season, you have to be happy with them for sure. And again, this is in a bad offense with bad coaching, again, who are taking deep shots to an undrafted free agent quarterback in college and Jeff Smith instead of Denzel Mims, which doesn't make any sense to me. So he was a positive. Jeff Smith was a huge negative, terrible route running. I believe he had a drop, the one slant that he ran where Darnold threw it inside, which again is another bad Darnold play, where I pointed that out. People are like, oh, well, you know, Darnold, you know, Jeff Smith stopped running the route and the ball was tipped at the line, went back. Ball wasn't tipped at the line. And again, based on the DB's leverage, he should not throw that ball. He forced it almost an interception. The DB dropped it. Jeff Smith ran an absolutely terrible route. Instead of, you know, breaking, driving across the guy's face and defeating the hands, he broke and then kind of went to get physical with the guy instead of crossing his face, which makes no sense. On a slant route, maybe on a comeback, maybe on a fade, you want to get physical, but it didn't really make a lot of sense there. Especially when he had room to cross the guy's face. So he was bad. Barrios was bad. And this is relative to, this is not relative to expectations. If you're expecting Barrios to be a starter, then yeah, it was a bad game. But again, he's a fifth, sixth guy on a team. Like, let's be honest. So, for that depth guy, I think he's been playing okay. But the fact that, you know, the Jets get into the green zone, as I call it, the 40 and in, and this is a part of coaching, and those three calls are literally a screen to Barrios. I forget what kind of screen it was, but a screen to Barrios goes for -2. Second and 12, deep shots to Jeff Smith. Third and 12, screen to Barrios. Like, what are we doing here? So those two guys disappointed. Other than that, from the receiver quarter, there really wasn't much else. Chris Herndon is awful, is absolutely terrible. And this is something that I got, you know, people contested a little bit with me when I said it. But I said after his rookie year, I thought he was being a little bit overhyped. I thought his rookie year was okay, but he was running wide open a lot of the times. And, you know, he made some nice adjustments to the ball. He had a nice catch versus the Packers game. But it's all about consistency for me. On a snap-by-snap basis, not just, you know, two highlight plays a game or one highlight play a game that I'm impressed with. So, you know, I wasn't expecting as much as some other people were coming into the season, but I was still expecting more than him to be one of the worst tight ends in the NFL. Every time he gets targeted, he catches the ball and fumbles it, or he drops the ball. You know, the Niners drop, the fumble versus the Bills. This is another situation where, you know, he did a good job chipping and releasing for a screen, catches the ball, and then he just has terrible technique in terms of running with the ball. You know, if you're coming – and this is stuff you learn in Pee Wee. If you're coming into a crowd or even if you're coming into a tackler, you want to get two hands in the ball, you know, two arms in the ball. You want to cradle that ball tight into your chest, tight into your midsection area. And he uses the ball, the form he's carrying the ball in, as like that buffer zone where he'll stick the ball out with his forearm to kind of break, not break the tackle, but absorb the blow of the tackle. That's like the last thing you want to do when you're taking on a tackle, because now the ball is not tight to your body, and obviously the ball can pop out a lot easier. So his like basic fundamentals on running with the ball after the catch are absolutely terrible. His hand technique on catching the ball is brutal. It's not just concentration drops. It's not just, oh, he's looking to run before he secures the ball, which are both true. As well, but his hand technique is awful. Like, there's a way you have to catch a ball. You want to put your hands, you know, your two index fingers, your pointers put together, your thumbs connected, and make that like that diamond. And that's how you want to ideally catch a ball, catch the nose of the ball, so it doesn't squirt through. Where Herndon catches the ball and one hand is like is sideways, and another one's like straight out. Like I can't even like it's hard to describe it, but his hands are so far apart, and not even not even in a position where they could clap together on the ball. Like he is terrible from a very basic level of football. It's not just a few unlucky plays; it's not anything. It's just all around really bad. Other than that, skill position wise, Kareem. Listen, like he's been a little bit disappointing to me, to be honest. I saw a little bit more. I thought I would see a little bit more. And again, you know, he's a rookie. He has time to develop. No training camp, no preseason. So I'm expecting him to develop a little bit more, but doesn't really break a lot of tackles, which we kind of expected. But his vision's been worse than I expected. I remember one play specifically where they're running to the left. I think it's a tight zone, inside zone. I think it's actually to the right. Sorry, it was to the right. It was inside tight zone to the right. It was to the left, Scott. I'm screwing up. So it was to the left, and it's a split zone. So from the left side of the formation, there's a tight end sifting, working underneath the formation. I call it sifting. And there's a linebacker who carries him, and he reads that linebacker and he thinks the linebacker is going to fill the hole when based on his hips and based on his momentum, he was clearly following the tight end in man coverage. He doesn't notice that. He bends the run back. He cuts the run back right into traffic where it was the 3rd and 2 right before he picked up that 4th and 1 where they ran that gap play right off of Becton's ass where he picked it up. Great job by Becton on that play. But he cut in the wrong hole because he didn't do a good job of reading the linebacker and what he was doing. So he put the Jets in that position to be in 4th and 1 where he should have easily picked up 3-4 yards in that play. So he's been struggling a little bit. Gore had a few nice runs. He's been decently consistent with the Jets. I thought the first couple of weeks his vision was lacking, but overall, I think he's been taking advantage of the Jets' run blocking, which has been better definitely this year, and getting some 5, 6, 7 yard gains. Now, if I am going into the offensive line, Fant definitely a positive game. I thought he did he definitely needs to change up his sets where he does way too many 45-degree sets, which, again, if you're just listening to this and you don't follow my show, you're not even really know too much what I'm talking about. But if you do want to go follow, that's what I'm here to describe. But he takes too many 45-degree sets. But overall, this game was really good, really, really good patience with the hands. A lot of the Chiefs players like to jump into that cross chop and then throw a rip and bend the edge. Frank Clark does that a lot. So do some of the other guys. And Fant did a nice job being patient with his hands, waiting for them to throw that cross chop and then landing into their chest and really catching them. So he did a really, really nice job this game. Van Roten, again, another good game. The first couple of games of the season, he was definitely disappointing. Looking at his film with the Panthers, I came on here and said I think he could be a below average to decent guard with the Jets, which is better than what they had the last couple of years. First couple of weeks didn't look like I predicted that well, but now the last couple of weeks looks like he's rounding into that form. So the positive to see, he did a really good job on one block where they designed the center and the right guard to be pulled to the left, and then a linebacker to kind of delay blitz into that B gap. And Van Roten did a really, really nice job keeping his eyes up, shoving one of the linebackers away from him, and then picking up that late, kind of looping in delayed blitz from another linebacker. So that was a fantastic play. So I was really happy with how he played this game. McGovern struggled, a little bit. He gave up one sack that was one-on-one. But overall, I'm going to assume that a lot of the like PFFs and stuff labeled him with a few things that they shouldn't have, where Lewis got absolutely demolished on a couple of stunts that, listen, if a guy's going to stun, if he's going to pick, if he's going to be that penetrator, yes, McGovern has to pick him up. But there's also a certain expectation on Lewis to be able to pass that off properly to McGovern, at least get hands on. And Lewis just did such a bad job of shooting with his inside hand on Chris Jones and not putting himself in the correct position with his hips, and was just getting destroyed across his face multiple times where McGovern didn't have the opportunity to get in front of Chris Jones based on how the defense was aligned. So McGovern wasn't great, but he was okay. But I'm going to assume a lot of those people put some stuff on him that shouldn't have been. Now moving over to the left guard, like I just described, Lewis was absolutely dreadful. And then we talked about Becton a little bit. solid, but not his best overall game. Again, there's a little bit too much of the reaching for contact, which I think he needs to clean up a little bit. Too much of his hands coming or shooting a little bit too high. You're seeing a lot with the hand shooting high and then guys forklifting him, coming underneath those elbows and lifting them upwards because he doesn't have a lot of surface area that he's getting, connecting with those hands that are too high. So I want to see that fixed. We saw that a couple of times this game. Again, reaching for contact a little bit too much. He got defeated on those. And again, Scott, like I know you do some type of martial art or you used to or boxing or whatever you did, but again, it, you know, do you have more time to anticipate a really long wind-up punch or an uppercut from 6 inches away, you know? So That's kind of like the boxing analogy. Like he's reaching a little bit too much and guys are able to anticipate it. So even though he has power, they're able to see those punches from far away and he's leaning into them instead of him being in more condensed areas and punching with proper timing. So, you know, again, those are things he needs to work on. I don't, you know, Becton's the best player on the Jets right now. Well, it's probably Quinnen Williams, realistically, then Becton, if we're being, you know, fair. But Becton's amazing, so I know people are going to, like, hate me for saying, oh, my God, this is what he needs to fix. But, yes, he needs to fix something. You know, everybody can fix something. So, again, he's been fantastic. I want to reiterate that. But there are some things he needs to clean up. But that's about it for the offense.
Just to confirm, the wider and loopier your punches are, the less you're going to have on them and the more you're going to leave yourself vulnerable to a counterattack. So that's exactly what you're talking about. Let's talk a little defense. Front seven, Joe, it was the same old story. John Franklin Myers and Quinnen Williams good. Everybody else,
Yeah, so as far as the front seven, yeah, Jordan Jenkins has been, his awareness is something that was a little bit overlooked in terms of him the last couple of years. Some run stuffing duties, he was good. Pass rusher, he was improving on. His awareness on read options has always been pretty bad, in my opinion. This year, it's been exemplified. So, saw a little bit of that. Basham didn't have the best game. He was pretty quiet. And the one, was it a jet sweep to Hardman, the first touchdown of the game, he did a really, really bad job of recognizing that. Really, really bad with his eyes, where, you know, in terms of his reads and what they should have been. So he got, you know, just stuck in no man's land on that play. Fado Kassi had a little bit better of a game. He showed up. I like Fado Kassi helped John Franklin Myers and Quinnen Williams moving into the future. Shepard was absent again, but yeah, Fado Kassi, just in terms of like his broad strength, was pretty impressive this game. Had a couple of run stuff tackle for losses. Quinnen Williams, again, for a guy who sucks so bad and, you know, should get traded for a second-round pick, again, had a pretty impactful game. again, minus a personal foul or two, which were really ticky-tacky, in my opinion. Again, I'm trying to be fair. Again, I'm criticizing Becton, and people probably hate me for it, but, you know, I'll be fair in terms of Quinnen Williams and his penalties. I thought a lot of them were crap. So he's been playing really well, sniffed out another screen, tackle for loss on that. He had a... You know, was it a sack on Mahomes on that play where Mahomes had his, you know, might have had his knee down? It was so close that I'm not going to go crazy. You know, obviously Jets fans are going to be biased that it was, but it's a bang bang play. You know, whatever they called in the field, they would have stuck with there unless they had a quicker frame than I did, which I'm assuming they do. They're the NFL. But regardless, destroyed the left guard on that. I believe it was with a double swipe into a rip, so he did a really good job defeating that containment punch on that elbow. So. Good job on him doing getting there. And again, we've talked about it so much with him. The situation he's in, it's not conducive to him getting a ton of stats, and he still is getting those stats where a lot of these statistical type people, not I'm talking about PFF and all these other people, have him at, like, you know, the second best run stuffing D tackle in the league and the sixth most effective defensive tackle from rushing in the league. Now again, now a new coach comes in next year. You know, now he's coaching to more penetrating. Now it's going to lead to more stats. Now you compile that with getting an edge rusher, and now these guys can't just scramble and have to step up to the pocket. That's more stats. Now if you get a corner or two or a safety who can cover, now, you know, there's times where he, you know, last with the Dolphins, bull rushed Eric Flowers, got to the quarterback, but he threw it away. Plenty of times this year where he's getting to the quarterback, but they're throwing it away as soon as they, you know, the bottom of their drop because there's nobody to cover. So you get a better corner or two, boom. That now you have even more staff, you know, like, so you have to look at every situation fairly. Like, it's not just, oh, you know, and this is the problem with staff, because, you know, a guy like, let's, you know, whoever, you know, let's just, I'm not even say Aaron Donald, because people, I don't even like making that comparison. Let's just say Chris Jones. Well, Chris Jones has a better defense around him. He has the Frank Clarks, you know, maybe he has a little bit of a second, or he does have a better secondary. So he is going to be able to get some more stats because this focus is not on him, and they can cover for longer, and he's penetrating more. So, I'm really excited about Quinnen Williams. He's definitely rounding out to what we think he would be. And again, he's 22 years old, second year with nothing around him. He's going to continue to get better, so you have to be really excited for him. John Franklin Myers had another good game, really, really good run stuff. I believe he was on 3rd-and-2 against Le'Veon Bell, and he just crossed the face of the right guard, double swipe, showed some of that really good power that he had, and just completely, destroyed Le'Veon Bell in terms of just picking him up as soon as he came to the mesh point. So good job by him. Huff played, I believe it was highest percent of snaps this game. I believe like 70%-ish. And he didn't really make an impact. So a little bit disappointing from him. But again, this is an undrafted rookie who's actually making an impact. So yeah, he had a one quiet game. You can't go crazy. Overall, he's something to be really, impressed with him. So that's about it from the front seven. I believe. Oh, well, if we're talking about the linebackers too, Hewitt, but like, he's a decent he's a backup. That's what he is. He's a run stuffing type backup player who will lay a spot on somebody. But in terms of coverage, not good. Avery Williamson is not good either. And the problem with a lot of the linebackers too with their coverage grades is, and I've talked about a lot with the spot dropping from Greg Williams, is he's not putting, whether it be defensive backs, whether it be Poole, whether it be Hewitt, whether it be Avery Williamson, whoever's dropping into that intermediate, into those intermediate zones, he's not giving them the ability to read 2-to-1, 3-to-2, all that spot, the pattern matching that I talk about. He's not giving them that ability. So their coverage numbers might look worse than they actually are. But overall, Avery Williamson didn't do a good job this game in terms of coverage. Neither did Hewitt, especially with the speed that the Chiefs have. So that's about it. But again, just you have to be fair with the situations where, yes, they're not good coverage linebackers. I thought Avery Williamson is a decent coverage linebacker a couple of years ago, but consistent spot dropping is not going to help anybody's coverage grades. So,
in the secondary, speaking of coverage, I don't think there was anything in particular that would resemble good coverage. Pierre Desir, same old story. As I like to say, the best thing you could say about him is that at least he's not Tremaine Johnson. The Chiefs had their way in the passing game. What did you see?
Yeah, and we did do a show last week, too, and like everybody like hyped up. Well, I'll start with Marcus May. People hyped up Marcus May the last 2 weeks. Last week, there was a play where he was clearly beat, where his eyes weren't proper, where it was the Bills last week, right? So Josh Allen could have thrown a post, and it would have been May's fault. This game, again, there was a shorter route concept to the defense's right side, and he got stuck a little bit too long on it, where he opened his hips up to that right side, and he was late to read the left side because he was the deep middle. I forget if it was cover one or cover three, but regardless, he has to read, both sides of the field. And if you are reading, to the the right side to the left side, if the right side is going to have shorter route concepts, you don't have to worry about that because it's not your responsibility. Your eyes have to flash to the left, so you have to put yourself in a position where you can play both sides. And he got stuck a little bit too long on the right for whatever reason, opened his hips up to it, and then I think it was a slot receiver beat Pool or had leverage on Pool on a post or a seam route, and May was late to recognize it, and Mahomes just overthrew the guy. So that could have been a touchdown that was on him too. So don't buy too much into the May hype in terms of his numbers right now, because getting beat for two touchdowns in two games, if that were to happen, wouldn't be a positive. Same thing with Pool. So I like Pool, but for the people who think he's like one of the best slot receivers in the NFL, I don't agree with that. I think he's solid, decent, but listen, when you're going against guys like Pierre Desir and Bless Austin and Poole, like, it's like, you ever hear the analogy, when you're running away from a bear with your friends, you don't have to be the fastest, but you just can't be the slowest type deal, So Poole has been, decent, but again, overall, like, he's beat on that plan. I think he's the lesser of the three evils with those guys. Bless Austin was terrible again, in my opinion. He has not been good this year. Last week he was beat for, two touchdowns, but one was called back because of a legal formation, where the one who was pump faked for let a guy get behind him. Another play, deep on the sideline where Knox like tripped and fell. That was his fault too, being a little bit too aggressive to jump the flat. And then he got beat for a touchdown by Gabe Davis. I forget exactly what happened there. And then you have this week where he got beat I believe for two touchdowns again. Yeah, it was two touchdowns. I forget exactly what happened with those plays. But again, not good. His tackling's bad. He throws his shoulders into guys. He ducks his head. He doesn't try to wrap up. Way too aggressive in coverage. Opens his hips up way too soon. Gets roasted that way. So he was not good. Desir has been playing a little bit better than he did to start the season. But yeah, he did give up a 3rd and 14. He opened his hips up too soon. But again, he's not Tremaine Johnson. So that's a positive. And then you have Ashton Davis, who, again, being fair, watched the tape with Marcus Coleman. We thought he was a more of a developmental, you know, raw prospect. And that's kind of what he's been. This is his first game with significant snaps. And we saw, you know, a nice player too. The one play where they, you know, air quotes capped Kelsey, where he was in man coverage and Kelsey about 15 yards off. Did a nice job staying square while, you know, Kelsey was stemming or in his drive phase before he broke to the outside on a corner route. He did a good job staying square and then broke on the corner route, cut off Kelsey, and the ball was overthrown. He did a really good job playing that. But then he had two, you know, hugely negative plays where, you know, the one, the jet sweep to Mecole Hardman. He does a decent job, you know, getting outside leverage because, again, you know, the pursuit comes from the inside, so you want to have outside leverage. But guess what? When you have outside leverage, you also have to close down on the receiver or on whoever's running the ball. So you can't get outside leverage. You can't just get flat-footed. So he gets outside leverage, gets flat-footed, gets ran right by, where, again, at a certain point during that play, he needed to close ground and attempt to make the tackle. Doesn't do that. Guy runs right by him for a touchdown, which, again, you know, one of the biggest responsibilities of a safety is being able to tackle the open field because you are that last line of defense in both the run and the pass game. So he didn't do a good job with that. And then another play, cover two, you have Tyreek Hill on a corner post. He bites too hard in the corner where he needs to recognize that his cloud corner and a curl to flat has underneath leverage and was gaining depth because the number two, I believe, cut, you know, inside. So the cloud corner has the underneath. So you have to trust him to get, you know, gain depth on that route. He jumps way too hard on the corner part of the route, you know, and then gets completely burned on the post. And especially a team with the Chiefs, especially studying their film, especially knowing it's Tyreek Hill, now fast he is, you have to play a little bit more conservatively. Listen, if Tyreek Hill's going to beat you 10, 15 yards, 20 yards down the field on a corner route, then, you know, it is what it is. You live to play another down. And at that point, it's almost more of your corner's fault, but you can't sell out and get beat deep. He sells out, gets roasted on that post part of the pattern, and then lets up a touchdown. So two touchdowns he was largely responsible for. That's not a positive, obviously. But, again, this is relative to expectations. I use that phrase a lot. My expectations weren't, you know, super high on him because I saw how raw he was in Cal. And then, you know, people come out during the training camp that they did have and, oh, my God, he had to pick this practice, he had to pick that practice. Again, I don't look into that stuff because I don't know what the situation was. Was it a bad read by the quarterback? Was he just standing there with a mic way just throwing the ball? You know, so you can't get too hyped about that stuff, so I wasn't buying into it too much. But, again, he's raw. He's going to take time to develop, so I'm not very disappointed that he got beat up a little bit versus the best team in the NFL. So that's the wrap of the secondary.
Not a pretty picture to paint, Joe, but then again, the Jets were playing the Chiefs, and we never really expected a pretty picture. So that's pretty much what we were expecting all along. And if you were somebody that was betting on this game, you certainly would have been betting on that outcome, just like you might bet on this week's outcome between the Jets and the Patriots, although I think this one is obviously a lot different because there's a real chance the Jets can be competitive, whereas nobody expected them to be competitive against the Chiefs. Lots of stuff you can bet on, too. Late fall college ball, the NBA bubble, UFC Fight Island. 2020 has provided you with tons of things that you could bet on. Get some skin in the game with MyBookie, where odds boosts, lightning deals, and free bets await you all season long. And with Turkey Day right around the corner, no better time to feast on NFL action. You can bet on college games, too. Full slate of them coming up. Make the right play and sign up at MyBookie. When you do, use the promo code OVERTIME to get your deposit matched halfway, all the way up to $1,000. Terms are simple. You put in $200, they match you $100 in your account. If you are already planning to bet this season, this is basically free betting money. Remember, it's all available at MyBookie. Just use the promo code OVERTIME when you sign up. Joe Blewett, breaking down the film over at Blewett's Blitz for JetsXFactor.com. Thanks so much for coming on. As always, really appreciate it. You've got plenty of film up there. I know you even did a YouTube Live with Kyle Smith, which is always fun because I love listening to both of you guys talk about film. Talk to me about that, when your next one's going to be, and what you've got over at JetsXFactor.com right now.
Yeah, speaking of betting, by the way, I bet on the Jets to lose not 19-25, and I put like 20 on it for a good chunk of change. And, of course, they lose by 26. So hopefully I make better this week. Just one freaking point. Yeah, plenty of stuff coming up. The YouTube Live with Kyle Smith. I do that every single first Monday of the month to interact with the fans a little bit more and the people who listen, because obviously I don't really interact a lot on a call-in show typically, because I just want to get into the film. But for that YouTube Live, the 15th, so the Sunday that the Jets do not play because of their bye week, I'm doing a YouTube Live at 4 o'clock with Marcus Coleman. So, again, for people who don't know that, who were born, you know, just yesterday, former NFL DB, 11 years in the league. So if you want to jump on the YouTube Live and go on YouTube and ask questions, I'll ask some questions. You can ask them, what's your biggest hit of your career? Who's the scariest quarterback you ever played against? For everyone to ask them, I think it's been pretty fun to do a YouTube Live with a former NFL DB who I consider a buddy of mine at this point. So that'll be fun. And then every single week you have the film breakdowns on for me as well. And the Twitter is some of the film threads, and then some of the drunken opinions on game day at times where I go back like, yeah, maybe I should delete that. So you can follow me all those places, Sean B31 on Twitter. And again, definitely make sure to check out that YouTube Live next week. That's going to be pretty fun, I think.
Make sure you check out the YouTube Live and everything that Joe's doing over at JetsXFactor.com. If you haven't given us a 5-star review on iTunes yet, if you could go ahead and do that for us, we really appreciate it. Easy way to help out the show if you like what we're doing. Doesn't take you much time, doesn't cost you any money, but it goes a long way to help us out. So if you could go ahead and do that for us, we'd be quite grateful. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts, you know where to go. That's Turn on the Jets Digital and turnonthejets.com.